Blind Cool Tech 182, October 18th, 2005. Hey y'all, how are you? I'm Larry Skukon, your host for this edition of Blind Cool Tech. And in the office with me today, I have Rob Meredith, developer of Studio Recorder. Hey Rob.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, man. What about you?
Not too bad.
I hear you have some new stuff to tell us about Studio Recorder.
Yeah, we do. We have a new beta of Studio Recorder coming out later on today. This is October 18th, and you should be able to receive this beta shortly after we finish this podcast. And we have an exciting new feature in here that we'd like people to test out for us. And I call this feature compatible paste. And some of you may know or may have experience with trying to paste and or insert files into material you might be working on. And you may know that oftentimes you'll get a nasty little message that says something like file formats are incompatible. And what that means is that the document you're trying to paste or insert is not exactly the same format which the document you're trying to insert into is. And what we've decided to do is attempt to address this situation by letting you paste in situations where the formats don't exactly match. In our particular case, we allow the number of channels or the sample size to differ. So, for example, you might be working on a podcast that is in mono, and perhaps you want to paste in a sound effect you have around, which is stereo. Well, in the old days of Studio Recorder, you couldn't do that. But with a new version, you'll be able to put your sound on the clipboard and move to the place in your podcast or whatever that you happen to be working on, and just go ahead and hit Control V to paste, and it will automatically convert the stereo sound effect into mono for you and place it into your current project.
And this happens instantaneously, right?
Right, there's no delays. In fact, the files can be of any size as long as the combined file size after paste wouldn't exceed the 2 gig WAV file limit. The paste is always instantaneous.
That's same, amazing.
Right, and same with the insert file. You can insert a file either WAV or MP3, and as long as the sample rates match, the file will just go in. Well, in the case of MP3, it's not instantaneous because we have to decode the data.
Okay.
But it will go this time rather than give you the error message.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
So what happens if the sample rates are not the same?
Well, unfortunately, if the sample rates differ, we still give you the same dialogue about the mismatched format. At some point in the future, we'd like to support real-time resampling or sample rate conversion, if you prefer, where we would let you paste files of differing sample rates. Now, that, unfortunately, couldn't be done instantaneously because resampling is a complex process. But that's kind of on the back burner right now, but something we may be able to do in the future.
Just for some background, would you want to tell us exactly what sample rate is?
Well, there's basically three parameters to uncompressed digital audio. They're key. And those are sample rate, bits per sample, and sample size. Sample size is sometimes referred to as bit depth. And the sample rate is the number of times per second that a digital representation of the current signal is gathered. It turns out that 44,100 times a second is the common sample rate used on, it's actually the only sample rate used on digital audio CDs.
That's a lot of sampling.
It sure is. But unfortunately, some consider that to be too low. And it can be too high depending on the kind of work you're doing. But 44.1 is a pretty good, reasonable operating sample rate, especially since it's CD quality.
So if we sample at 2250, we're only sampling half as many as we would at 44.1.
Right. And the interesting thing here is to keep in mind what's known as the Nyquist frequency. The Nyquist frequency is the maximum frequency that a digital sample can reproduce. And it turns out that the NyQuest frequency is always half of the sample rate. So if you're sampling at 44,100, the highest possible frequency of sound you can capture is 22,050.
That's amazing. I had no idea.
Right.
What do you know the background of that, or why is that?
I sure don't, but I suspect it's because you're sampling both the positive and negative side of the waveform.
Mm-hmm.
And as you approach the NyQuest frequency, essentially you have the signal begins to square. So if you had a 22,050 cycle signal at 44,001, essentially every other sample would be the positive side and every other sample would be the negative side.
So humans can't really hear much above that anyway, right?
Some can, but most can't. The common hearing range is usually expressed as what we call 20 to 20, or 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz. And assuming all is well and you can hear above 20,000 and your equipment can play it back accurately, then you may be able to benefit from that high of a sample rate. But what's more critical is that a lot of these new DVD audio formats and SACD use a much higher sample rate. In some instances, they use 96 or 192 samples or 192,000 samples a second.
Wow.
And that pretty much addresses some of the more complex issues with digital audio and, gives you no chance for any kind of serious roll-off or loss of high-frequency content.
So what were the other two critical parts of an audio signal you were telling us about?
Well, we have the sample size, or bit depth, which is the number of bits each sample uses. And then we have the number of channels, which is, at least in our situation, always either one or two.
For mono and stereo.
Right. And sample size is important here because sample size dictates how much noise is in the signal. When sound cards first started coming along for the PC, a common sample size was 8 bits. And if you go back and listen to old sound effects and old wave files, you'll notice there's a lot of hiss and what we call quantization noise, which is the idea that when you digitize a sound, the lower values tend to square off at the edges. And that produces kind of a buzzy, hissy, fuzzy kind of a sound. And when CDs came along, we went to 44.1 16-bit stereo. And the 16-bit is an incredible improvement over 8-bit audio with a potential, peak reproduction of 96 dB rather than the 48 dB you would get with 8-bit samples. And then commonly now, the industry is moving towards a 24-bit sample format, which gives you 144 potentially of dynamic range, 144 dB. The main difference between 16-bit and 24-bit samples to most people is a slight reduction in quantization noise. And if you can hear quantization noise in 16-bit signals, then you're probably a good candidate for 24-bit signals. But if you're not bothered by such things or never noticed them or have no idea what I'm talking about, you're probably okay with 16-bit audio. It turns out that all MP3 files use 16-bit audio anyway, so there's really no advantage to recording in a 24-bit format if you're going to go to MP3.
Okay, so back to the sample rate. Are there actually any audio programs that can convert sample rates?
There are. What will often happen, like we discussed earlier, is if you paste mismatched sample rates, you'll either get an error message or the program will do it anyway and let you worry about the fact that the pitch is wrong. There are programs that let you change the sample rate. For example, SoundForge has an option called Resample. And that's an algorithm that does a very fine job. It takes a long time to run, but it will convert to any sample rate you desire with basically no degradation in sound quality.
Well, so if you're going from a lower sample rate, though, to a higher one, how do they know what to fill in those values? Do
they, just they use an interpolation process, actually, a complex. And in the case of SoundForge, you have four different levels you can pick from, with one being a low-quality resampler and four being the best. And in fact, in the manual, they usually recommend two or three. They say that four is overkill. It does take more time. It turns out that I generally use four because I guess I usually think it's worth it on half the time, but it's a really nice resampling algorithm. But there are resampling algorithms out there that don't do a good job, and what we call the sound that you get when you have a poor resampling is aliasing. And aliasing is essentially what happens when you try to sample a frequency that is higher than your sample rate without proper filtering. And aliasing shows up as kind of a whistly, ringy kind of an effect toward the high end of a signal. You can notice a classic way that most of us can experience aliasing would be to use one of the more recent Creative Labs Sound Blaster cards, which use a real-time resampling algorithm. And in this case, JAWS users who use Eloquence as their synthesizer can hear on these sound cards a little bit of an aliasing effect, because Eloquence actually runs with a sample rate of 11,025, but the Sound Blaster Live and Sound Blaster Audigy cards actually resample to 48,000 hertz. And there is a slight difference if you do a side-by-side with a sound card that doesn't resample versus the SB Live. You'll notice that the Eloquence sounds quite a bit brighter, which it turns out some people like. Aliasing is not always negative. It generally is, and for purists it is. But in the case of the SB Live, it makes Eloquence sound a little brighter. And from what I've heard, people tend to like that.
Interesting. So back to Studio Recorder. We mentioned that these features are instantaneous, and about the seventh or eighth time that we tried to do this podcast previously, you were telling me about 101 tricks with Studio Recorder, and would you mind going back over that again?
Let me give you two today.
Well, we ought to go for 10 or 12 pod tries then. Maybe we'll get four.
As a result of our new ability to have the compatible paste that we discussed at the beginning, we have kind of an interesting, quirky side effect with the new feature when you change the format. Did we mention in this particular run that you can change the format of a file?
No, we hadn't.
Okay.
It's hard to remember. We've tried this so many times.
Do you want to ask a question, Roger?
People aren't going to believe we actually recorded this the first time, and I accidentally plugged my earbuds into the microphone jack, and you can imagine I didn't sound too great.
Of course, being the digital audio enthusiast that I am, I thought I could resurrect it, but it really was bad, and we couldn't use it.
So hopefully this will sound a little better. But anyway, tip number one.
Let me go over the format thing real quick. The in Studio Recorder, there's an option on the file menu called Format, or Wave Format, I believe. And before, you could only change the wave format before you actually started to record anything, so it had to be an empty file. Now, we let you change the bits per sample and the number of channels either before or after you start the recording process. In fact, you can even open up an existing file and change the number of channels. So you might want to, for example, convert a file to mono or convert a file to stereo if you wanted to record more into that file. But the quirky side effect is, since we do this conversion in real time, that you can actually convert a stereo file to mono, edit the file, and then convert it back to stereo if you should change your mind, and all this stuff will still be intact.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really is, and it's kind of a strange thing. If you, for some reason, don't prefer this behavior, and you really like your mono changes to be mono, if you should go back to stereo, All you need to do is save the file and reopen it. And once the file's saved, the changes are lost forever when you exit that document. So that essentially forces it to be a mono file from that point on. But the behavior, because it's a virtual editing environment, is kind of interesting. So that's one of that's kind of a tip and trick. But the real one I had, I was telling Larry in take two, I believe, or maybe it was take three, that that I always wanted to write a book, 101 studio recorder tricks that nobody knows exist, that maybe in the manual, but people missed them, or perhaps didn't get into the manual. Now, I probably don't have 101, but I have quite a few. I'm going to share one of those today. I was working on a project last weekend, and I had gathered some material with the R1, which we reviewed earlier, on Blindfold Tech. And I wanted to archive that onto a traditional 700 meg CDR. And what Studio Recorder has always done is it allows you to undo through save, which means you can work on a document, save it, and then still undo back to your original state if you wish, or any number of undos that it took to get to that particular point in the editing process. And what I hadn't realized before, I mean, I knew I always liked this feature, and some programs do it, some don't. In fact, I don't believe SoundForge does, at least version 6 doesn't. But I always liked this feature. I always told the people in the studio, you could record all day, and as long as you don't close the document, you can undo back to the morning if you really had to. But in a practical manner, what I was able to do was edit down some files and save them to disk and leave the documents open. I started my CD creation software and I added the files in to see, you know, how much space I had in the project, and I found that I wasn't quite up to the 700 meg limit, and I thought, well, you know, I really wished I hadn't deleted that part of the file that I was working on. Like, I could squeeze more out of the CD than I thought. So all I got to do is flip back to Studio Recorder and do a couple of undos and just resave until you get the file sizes exactly how you want them to be, and nothing's lost, and you can run the file to CD. And in fact, if you for some reason wanted to, you could leave the documents open and continue editing after you went to CD. In this case, I didn't, but it really lets you tune a project right before the CD burning process, to the extent that might be pretty difficult if we didn't allow you to undo through save. If we threw out all of our undos when we saved, then you'd have to basically copy the file to do that kind of work before you went to CD, so you have a backup.
That is very cool.
Yeah.
So the three main things about this new beta of Studio Recorder are the ability to paste and insert files of different types, except for sample rate.
Right.
And then the ability to change the format of an existing file.
Right.
Is there anything else?
That pretty much sums it up. We completed support for remote controls in the previous beta, and we'd like to hear from some people via the Studio Recorder list if they're having success with the remote control support we added. It turns out that we didn't get any feedback on that yet, and we figured one of two things: either A, it's perfect, or B, nobody's using it. I kind of think it might be B.
So, and which is a shame, because we know there's a lot of studios out there that would love this capability, and maybe we should explain what we mean by remote control support. And that is the ability, I don't know, I think the term external controller has more meaning, but what it essentially is a box that's separate from your PC that you can use to control the entire recording process. Many of these boxes have a jog wheel on them and dedicated record and rewind buttons, so that a professional narrator doesn't have to concern themselves with a computer and a keyboard. They can just use this remote controller or external controller to do all of their recording and editing.
In some cases, these controllers also have lights and/or displays, so you can actually move into a booth with the controller and see your current record time and total time, whether you're in record mode or not, in fact, which mode you're in. It just sort of depends on the controller you choose. But they can be pretty flexible, and you don't have to mess with a narrator trying to reach over and hit the wrong key on the keyboard. It's just a lot less keys to hit, and it takes up a lot less space in the booth as well.
One of my favorite features of the external controllers is that you actually don't even have to have Studio Recorder in the foreground to edit files or initiate a recording process or whatever. So if you're doing computer demonstrations, you can go ahead and get over to where you want to be, or if you need to stop, you know, you don't have to go back and edit the file later. You can be in your, you know, whatever program you're wanting to record and demo, and then initiate the recording process from there. It's a really interesting side effect of it.
It is neat. And in summary, we support the J.L. Cooper MCS3 serial version. We support the Transport with a Z from Frontier Design. And we support the good old Plextalk RE11 controller, which has been discontinued.
One of the interesting things, too, about the previous beta of Studio Recorder is that you can go to the Help menu, and then, what's the name of that menu option? Controller?
Remote Key Describer, I believe.
I believe that is it. And you can actually press the keys on the remote control and have Studio Recorder describe to you what they do in this particular application. So you can even move the jog wheel, you know, press the record buttons or whatever, and it'll show you exactly what effect that key is going to have. And that's important because every one of these controllers is different. So some of them may have 8 function keys, some may not.
All right. And even here at APH, we not only have a hard time deciding what key should do what, since these controllers differ substantially, but we may also need a little refresh on what they actually do. I think that's how that feature got put in originally.
I think it probably is. Okay, well, if you are interested in beta testing Studio Recorder, you can go to aph.org/beta, click on the Studio Recorder link and the download link. We will say that there is no telephone support for any APH beta software. To get support, you must join the Studio Recorder email list, which you can do by sending a blank email to studiorecorder-request@freelists.org and putting subscribe in the subject line. And we hope to see some of you over on that list. This is a very exciting and flexible and rock-solid recording solution for many, many needs. So if you're interested in trying something like this out, feel free to join us over there.
Yeah, we'd be glad to hear from you.
That's going to do it for issue 182 of Blind Cool Tech. We've had Rob Meredith in the office with us today. I'm Larry Skutkan signing out and reminding you that you can leave a comment on our comment line, which we will play on the show. That number is 206-984-9203. Our email is blindcooltech@gmail.com, or you can check us out on the web at blindcooltech.com. Y'all have a good one, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us, Rob.
All right.